Thanks for checking out today's podcast. Today we got Leonard Brady Jr. I'm the host, Justin Spaulding. We've got right around 2,000 apartments in Wisconsin. I've been building businesses and buying real estate for the last 12 years. And Leonard and I actually played college football together for a year or 2 years?
2 years.
2 years at the University of Dubuque. And that's how we got to know each other. That was in the early 2010s. And then, you know, like what, around 2015, I think, you reached out. I was doing direct sales. You reached out, right?
The Avocare.
Yep.
Avocare. That's right.
That's where I, you know, made good money to be able to start buying real estate. I stashed up. And I think it was the spring of 2015, because I was at the Kentucky Derby, if I remember correctly, when you called. I picked up the call. I walked out of the party that we were at for the Derby. I wanted to take your call because I knew it was about the Avocare stuff. Yeah. We kind of been talking back and forth. I think that was the day you got started rocking and rolling and that. Yeah, and man. So we kind of, you know, got that rocking for a while. And then you got involved in our mentorship, as far as being able to buy real estate and stuff. You've got an awesome story. So you've been involved in our mentorship now for a handful of years.
Yeah. I went to the first, I think I was part of the first group. So
yeah. When I think even before that, I think, did you get the initial like kind of package that I had offering back?
The initial course,
so it was like 2018, 2019. It's like 5-6 years you've kind of been in this real estate game now learning and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You've got an awesome story already. So that's really why I wanted to have you on. I mean, you're someone that I've been mentoring along the way, and you know, just sitting here talking to you, it's I'm always going to learn something from people as well. And you're talking about some of the loans that you're getting and stuff like that, which they seem pretty competitive. I'm like, man, I need to learn something from Leonard here at some point. But yeah, just excited to have you on, and would love for you to share your story a little bit. So that being said, who's Leonard Brady? Like, what's your background? Where are you from?
So I'm originally from Gurnee, Illinois. Six Flags. That's what I always tell people. You know, I grew up there, moved out. I had a buddy that was at University of Dubuque and got me to come out there.
Did he play football?
Yeah, Marcus Taylor.
Marcus Taylor.
Yeah.
We went to
high school together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've known Marcus for years.
I didn't even realize that. I never knew that.
Yeah.
I never knew you.
It's the only reason why I ended up in Dubuque.
So was he, must have been a year or two older than
you? He was a year.
Okay, a year older. Yeah. Because I think Marcus might have been my age. And then, because you're younger than me, I think. So you graduated in 2009?
Yeah, 2009.
Okay. So Marcus got you out to Dubuque.
Yeah, Marcus got me out to Dubuque and, you know, came out there.
Both our first fall was 2009, right?
Yeah.
At Dubuque. Because I was at Whitewater for 2008 and then transferred to Dubuque. You came in and we played 2009 and 2010 together.
Yeah. And then I transferred to Whitewater.
Yeah. That's right. You did. Yeah. You didn't play football at all there, though.
No. I had tore the Achilles. That's the whole thing, man.
That's right. I forgot about
that. Yeah.
Man, that seems like a lifetime ago.
I know. But, you know, bounced around, just job after job. Decided to come back to Dubuque and just start working, man. Start dead-end jobs, you know, job after job.
Once you left, did you just like Dubuque? Because that's what brought you back?
It's cheap, man. I went back home, Gurnee, Illinois, and was paying like $10.50 for a one-bedroom apartment back in 2013.
Yeah. Because you're not too far from Chicago, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Chicago, you got expensive living.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, just moved back because it was cheap. You know, I knew the area. Just started working, you know, kind of a reset. Following you. I can't remember if it was. Was it Instagram back then or what? Or was it
Facebook? I mean, I'm sure. So when I was doing direct sales, and everyone that follows me knows that I'm persistent as hell. So everybody in my phone, everybody that was on Facebook, everybody that was on Instagram, everybody that was LinkedIn, like I was hitting up everybody to be, you know, part of direct sales, whether they wanted to just buy the product that we had or, you know, if they wanted to get involved in the business opportunity that we had there too, I was just hitting up everybody. Right. So I probably was blowing you up for a while. Is my guess.
Yeah. I know we had conversations on the phone, but I think it was Facebook is where I kind of saw the transformation of that Avocare, but then also the real estate starting to bleed into there eventually.
Yep.
Got your book. I remember where I was at when I got that, read the book, and then just started picking your brain for, you know, other different types of books. I mean, I know we talked about, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Art of the Deal, things like that. So just try to learn as much as I could just on real estate. At that time, I was still just kind of flirting with it.
Yep.
Didn't really know if I wanted to do it or not, but it was, in a sense, it became a hobby of something to educate myself on and learn about.
Yeah.
Just in case one day I wanted to go that avenue.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of people that can relate. I mean, I mean, the reason that I started doing all the stuff that I do, number one, is because I thought it would be cool to document my process so I go back and look. But then I also knew, like, when I was trying to get started in the real estate game, my parents obviously had, you know, successful business, but they didn't really do real estate. And I was just trying to do anything that I could to learn about real estate, read books, look online, whatever. So part of the reason I started doing everything that I'm doing, besides document, is to help other people, right? And so I think, you know, people like me, people like you are the reason that I started doing all this stuff, which is part of the reason, another reason I wanted to have you on the podcast. But there's also so many people out there that have similar background to us or a similar story. And so prior to you getting, you know, you finding me and kind of, you know, getting involved in direct sales with me, and then also, you know, taking my advice on real estate and starting getting the real estate game, which we're going to get much more into Leonard's story on how he acquired the real estate he has with no partners, by the way, in a little bit here. But there's a lot of people that can relate because, I mean, when you first started kind of doing this, you were in debt from school, right?
Oh, yeah, man.
How much debt were you
all
in?
All types of debt.
So it wasn't even just from school.
Not just school.
It was
life.
Credit card debt, consumer life, debt. Man. Yeah, yeah. So what? How much debt were you in?
Oh, man. I don't know. I think at that time I was probably in at least over 65, 70. And that's going back to, like, you know, the 2012.
Yep.
You know, where 60 grand was a lot less.
Well, yeah.
But yeah,
60 grand felt like a lot more than what 60 grand feels like
now.
Today. So, because obviously the dollar's going, your dollars are going less, you know, not as far today with all the inflation. All right, so 2012 to 2015, you're in debt, $60,000 or so, right?
Yeah.
At that point in time, you didn't really have any assets, right?
No, man, it was no assets.
So you had your money coming in from work, and then you're in $60,000 a day. You're going out, you're working every day. How many hours a week were you working at jobs?
At that job, I'll put it this way. I think 1 year I hit 60 grand a year for the year, and I made probably about $14 an hour.
$14 an hour.
That's how much I was
making. So 60 grand. How many hours were you
working? I was doing youth care work.
Well, you were probably getting, were you working multiple jobs? Were you getting like overtime?
No, it was one job. I was working overtime.
Okay, so you're working overtime. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's how much. 14.
Yeah. It was like two full-time jobs, you know?
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, you're probably working 60, 80 hours a week.
Just, you know, just working, you know? Many hours as you want. They need people 24 hours.
And it
care.
Was basically paycheck in.
Paycheck in, paycheck out.
Paycheck going right back out back to cover out, your debts, man, cover your living debts, expenses.
You know, got to the point where I couldn't even pay my debts. You know, went through that whole process.
Judgment, credit score probably took a hit.
Credit scores in the toilet.
You got to a point where, like, you couldn't pay any of your debts? Or you were
I had private student loan. We had to go to court. I got a judgment put on me. Agreed to pay X amount of dollars, which actually came later in my real estate. That came back and haunted me. But yeah, we overcame that. But yeah, man, it was just trying to figure out how to get out of that hole. Just, you know, every day just living to work at that point.
So before you bought your first property, did you get out of that $60,000 of debt, or did it simultaneously?
No, I still had that. So what ended up happening is I started stacking my way through my career, bouncing from job to job, but always in the back of my head, it's like, hey, I'm going to go from $12 to $15 to $20, you know, and just continue to take jobs where I can continue to make more money. And what I started doing was, you know, just stacking my money and started paying off little things on my credit report. It started with, you know, the $15 to $30, getting all those inquiry or those hard off your credit score, and, you know, just try to remove as many as possible as fast as I can. I went to a bank and I just asked them. I said, hey, how do I get approved for a loan? I knew I wasn't going to get the loan, but I wanted to know, what are you guys looking for? Because at that time, I didn't even know what would qualify you for a loan or what wouldn't qualify you.
Now, were you asking for a loan for, like, multifamily real estate, a single family home, a business loan?
I asked for multifamily real estate, you know, like a duplex for you or a fourplex. And the lady kind of just said, you need to just pump the brakes. Pump the brakes, bud. But I mean,
it's smart though. You're trying to, all right, this is where I got to be before they'll even consider me.
Yeah, but she kind of gave me, I mean, she hit me with a reality check, but to this day, you know, that's somebody that I'll still go back and, you know, say, hey, what's your rates looking like?
Yeah.
You know,
so she's got to see.
Yeah. So she's been part of my process. You know, I did my first two properties with her. And then after that, you know, the rates haven't been favorable, but I still try to reach out and see, hey, what can you do?
Yeah, it's never
just because she was part of my journey.
Yeah.
They gave me the blueprint. Hey, you need to have this. You need to, you know, be at this job for X amount of time, years. It's not all about credit score, which a lot of people don't know when you're getting started.
Yep.
There's different programs out there for you. So,
So what year was it when you went to the bank to start to like look at, okay, you know, and figure out and ask what
position you'd be in to get a loan? 2019.
That's when you first went and had that conversation.
Yeah, I had that conversation.
So we're only looking at 5 years ago.
Yeah. And then the next year, COVID hit.
Yep.
And that's kind of where my real estate journey, it's weird enough, started during COVID.
All right. So hold on. So you, when you went to talk about the loan, you said you weren't completely out of debt yet. Were you still around the 60 grand or you'd already gotten knocked that down to maybe 50, 40?
No. We were still well over that. I was literally just knocking off little items.
Okay. Gotcha.
It really wasn't making a big difference on how much debt I had, but what it was doing was cleaning up my credit score.
Okay.
A lot of those old cell phone bills whatever that you forget to pay or don't pay, you don't have at that time that kind of add up.
All right, that makes sense. Then what happens next? So 2019, you have the conversation with the loan. The banker says, "Whoa, Leonard, pump the brakes,
bro. Maybe you need to look at a single family home or something." So I was just like, "I ain't listening to you." I listened to her. I just kept reading. I was putting money away in my 401k. At that time, so while I'm working this job, I've been stashing money in there, and then I found out you can use that money
for a single family
home. So that's kind of where it started during COVID. You know, a lot of people weren't working, and banks were looking to give money away to anybody that was working. A lot of people were trying to buy homes at that time, but they weren't working. So I just inquired, and that's kind of how it started.
So you pick up, so how'd you find the single family home? And what was your mindset with the single family home when you were looking?
I guess I'll take a step back. So kind of what happened was,
because obviously people, you know, I'm like, single family homes aren't an asset. Mm-hmm. But I also say, you know, that's for 99%, 99.9% of people, they're not an asset. Mm-hmm. But that's why I think it's important for you to share your story and how you, I want to hear what your mindset was going into, because you initially went in wanting to talk to the bank about multifamily is what you said. She says, pump the brakes. Okay, well, how do I even just get started?
Right.
Now you go into the single family. So what was your mindset then picking off a single family?
Right. Home? So it kind of, I was still educating myself, and it kind of started as a joke. I was with my girlfriend and her grandmother at the time. And, you know, we were in her apartment and she had her grandkids over, and you could just hear kids upstairs running all over their head. And she's like, "Man, I wish I had a house where I could have a fenced-in backyard, give me a dog, have my grandkids in the backyard." I was like, "I'll buy you a house and rent it to you."
This is your grandma.
Yeah, this is my lady's grandmother. Okay, a house and rent it to you.
Okay.
You know, just, "Oh, yeah, well, yeah, okay, let me know when you find one." It was kind of just like, "What do you mean by that?"
Yeah.
So I kind of took offense to that, and I was like, "Well, let me look." So I started looking. I mean, at that time, I think she was paying, $1,000 for a two-bedroom apartment in 2020. And I was like, "Yeah, I can get you a house."
And she was already in Dubuque?
Yeah, already in Dubuque.
Okay.
And I was like, "I can get your house and get it to you and rent it to you for less than that." And that's kind of how it started. I started looking at houses. I think it happened so fast. I really wasn't even qualified when I put an offer in. But we were looking at places, and then we went to open house over the weekend. I saw the house. I was like, "Oh, man, I like this house. It's got a nice basement. That's not a crawl space. It's not finished, but it's a nice basement. Somebody would like to come down here and they do the laundry and whatnot."
Laundry, storage.
Yeah, it's all that storage, good space, place for fenced in backyard.
Grandkids to rollerblade.
The whole shebang. And I think it was like $130,000. So when saw it, I told my realtor, put in an offer at noon. By 5 o'clock, they told me that they accepted my offer. And I was like, "Shit, I guess I got to figure out how to get it financed."
Well, I mean, I've done that though. When I was first going out and looking at deals, I mean, most people would have looked at me and be like, "You're not qualified." And deep down, I'm like, "I know I'm not qualified," but I'm like, I always just really believed if I put in the work and put in the effort and just showed up, you know, just showed up places, that something was going to fall into place. And that's exactly what you did. You kind of had a blind faith, like, "Okay, I'm just going to be persistent and consistent and show up." Yeah, I was like,
"We'll figure it out."
Yep.
It's like, "Well, need the earnest money." I was like, "Well, let's roll the dice."
Yep.
Gave him the earnest money and went back to the banker and was like, "What programs do you got for me?"
So what was the earnest money? Was it 5 grand?
I think it was 2 grand.
2 grand. Yeah, about 1%, a little more than 1% of the deal.
And I worked it backwards. Which I find myself doing a lot of my deals I'm working them backwards.
What do you mean by working it backwards for someone?
You know, find the property. I'll figure out how to finance it. I'll figure out how to get the down payment money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, It's super cliche when you're first starting that when people tell you, oh, there's plenty of money, don't worry about it. And you're like, dude, whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I was like that. I was like, there's no way. But there's money out there.
Yep.
And I've done all my deals myself, but I've used my 401k. I've used Roth IRAs. I've pulled money from anywhere. I've done
hard money loans. Starting to refinance your own properties now.
I've refinanced my own properties. I mean, I've done some stuff, all legal stuff. I don't mean like that. Yeah. But I've done some stuff where it's just like puts a lot of stress on yourself to come through.
Yeah.
That if you don't,
yeah, for sure.
You know, you got to come up with this money. So we kind of worked it backwards. I think I put 10% down for that property. Just took it out of my 401k. That one was a pretty clean cut. The biggest thing was getting qualified because at that time my credit score was a 627. So
at least you'd already been paying off, knocking off the small stuff to get your. So you put yourself. The key thing here, right, is you're showing up. You beyond showing up, you're now also starting to take actions that start to get you aligned with where you need to be in a position so that when an opportunity comes along, you know, and then also you put yourself in that position to be, you know, in position to take on the opportunity, but then also being able to connect dots and solve problems. Mm-hmm. You hearing what your, you know, girlfriend's, you know, grandma had to say and what she was looking for. You're like, wait a minute. Right.
Yeah,
you started to right. So it's like it's a common like this is also why like some people might listen to this, like, oh, man, like, and, you know, Leonard doing what he's doing. Yeah. Well, he had some luck there. I'm like, well, you know what? Yeah. But like he was prepared for when the opportunity came. And then he also was able to connect. He was also able to listen to the world around him and then be able to solve problems for.
And I've been there solve too, a problem man. For I've somebody. Been there with all that. That guy's always getting lucky.
Yeah.
But when you surround yourself with certain people. And you're doing certain things just fall your way.
Yep, you were prepared.
It just does.
You're prepared for the moment. And the other thing that I think I really took out of that is, you know, you're never gonna fully have a bulletproof plan that's gonna go 100% the way you think it's gonna go. So, for example, with you, like, you going and putting an offer into the house and now having it go under contract and putting $1,500, $2,000 earnest money down, which is a ton of money, right? At that point in time, especially is a ton of money.
20% my down payment.
Well, and then 20%, right? But you're on the hook for it, and you don't even know how you're gonna qualify for the loan. You don't necessarily know how the whole 401k thing's gonna work out. But again, you just started to take those steps forward, and there's so many times like people think they have to have all the answers and all the information right now before they make a decision, when really you only need like maybe 20%, 40%, 60% of the information to really make that decision. Then the rest of it is going to fall into place as you step forward and as you continue to prepare, get yourself prepared for the opportunity.
Yeah, so. I still talk with that my loan lady, and she'll say, I don't even know how you got that rate. You know, I don't know how we got you approved, you know, because I got 2.8 on that house.
Yeah.
With a 627 credit score. I had to do some programs. I had to take some computer class or whatever on home ownership and do a couple. I did like four of those things, man. And then that story is crazy because that's when I figured out I could do it.
Yep.
Because 24 hours, or I would say 3 days before closing, there turns out there was a lien on the house. So then we had to push that off so that
tax lien or something.
Yeah. So that the seller could get that cleaned up. And then 24 hours before we closed, the banker called me and she told me that I had a judgment. I didn't know what she was talking about. That's the judgment I was talking about that came back to me. She was like, well, you got this judgment from some private student loan. I was like, yeah, I've been paying $75 on that for the last 4 years. You know, that's what we agreed to. And she's like, yeah, but we don't give mortgages to individuals with judgments.
Need to have it cleared up.
Yeah. So even though we had documentation that said I'm paying XYZ for, you know, for this long until it's clear, that particular bank did not do any.
Yeah, so to clean that up.
So basically, I had to pay that off. So I had to take the rest of my 401k, dump that, pay that off just to secure the property. Right,
which you probably had to also pay penalty on and tax on get rid of I did the same thing. I had some retirement accounts and IRA accounts. My great grandpa would give me change all the time when I was a kid, and it was like, you know, probably hundreds of dollars worth of change for 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. right? Maybe $1,000 worth of change, whatever. My parents made me. Or, you know, I was so young, I didn't really know what was going on. But my parents started an IRA or whatever for me back then, started with all that change. So by the time I bought my first property, I was like $5,000 short. Mm-hmm. So I actually liquidated the IRA that started from that, because that change over 20 years or whatever grew into from a grand, grew into like $5,000. So I liquidated that, but I had to pay the penalty on it. I had to pay the taxes on it. But I still, putting it in real estate, I'm still ended up way ahead over the next 5 years.
I'm way ahead on everything. Yeah,
it was a no-brainer. It was no-brainer for you to pay the tax and pay the penalty.
Get the deal done because at that time, you know, 24 hours before closing, I've already told my lady's grandmother. She's already told them her 30-day notice. Right.
She's already ready to move in. She's got the moving truck.
She's supposed to move in.
No lease.
Yeah, no lease. Yeah. Where's she going to go? I don't know.
But to be homeless. If
I'm living in an apartment. I don't have any space.
So sometimes, like, it's so good to be able to put yourself in pressure situations like that, right?
I mean,
so
I just had to figure it out, man. Right. Luckily, the title company, the lawyer I was working with, he threw that all together, negotiated that for me. We got it all cleared up. And
did the bank know you were going to – did you also live at the property for a while? Did you guys kind of split it, or did she just?
No, she just. She just.
She, did the bank know you were gonna?
So, forgot about that part. So, originally, no, I was not going to.
You were not going to what? You were not going to rent it.
I was not going to live there.
You were not going to live there originally.
Okay. Right, originally.
Yeah.
I didn't know this at the time that you couldn't do that because I was just rolling with the punches. I didn't know you couldn't do that, but. At that time, I was working railroad and whatnot and things. I ended up not moving to continue that career. So I ended up staying in that house. I ended up staying there anyway.
In the house that you bought?
Yeah,
in the house. So you ended up staying there a little bit with the grant? Yep.
I ended up staying there. We all just stayed there for about 4 or 5 months. And then I was like, this place is too small, man.
Yep.
And that's how we got the second property. So my first two properties were single family.
Yep.
The second.
So then you 6 months later, you're still renting that property. You realize, okay, space is tight. We gotta go. Now your mindset was, I'm not gonna go rent a house. I'm just gonna go buy another house.
Yeah, I'm buying another house.
Okay. So how'd you go through that whole process? Given that it only been, I mean, with your whole credit, the whole credit situation, the whole judgment situation, the whole being in debt situation still. You kind of getting laughed at by a bank and now closing your first deal. Mm-hmm. And now it's only 6 months later and it was probably it's in the same town of Dubuque.
Yeah, same
town. How'd you go about
getting 6 months later, I should clarify. 6 months later, I started looking. I got laughed at. I was told no.
By the bank?
Yeah.
I was thinking, same bank?
Yeah. What are you doing? Same lady.
Yep.
What are you doing? And I was like, well, this is not going to work.
Yeah.
So it was actually probably about 11 months in where we finally found another property where we actually finally got out.
Okay.
Moved into that property.
What was it about that property, that second property you bought, that made you realize that that was the one? Because you just said by the time we found the property, so I'm taking it, you looked at a lot of properties?
Looked at a lot of properties. So this is one where...
Like four properties, 40 properties, 10, 100?
I know people hate me in town. I'd be going to open houses that I have no business going to.
That's all right.
I was like, don't even waste your time. I'm just looking.
Yep.
So I don't want to waste your time. I'm just here to check it out.
So you just show up all the time.
So I just show up all the time. Yep. But this particular one, I called the same realtor on. And I had him show me this one. This one was a rental. So eventually what I was going to do is
this was listed for rent, not even for sale.
No, this was a rental. It was listed for sale.
Got you. Okay.
But at this time, I have learned the rules that, hey, you have to live there.
Yep.
So I was like, all right, let me find a place.
If you get a home mortgage.
Yeah. Right? So I was like, let me find a place I can live in for a year and fulfill that obligation.
Yep.
And then I can move out.
Okay. Rent.
So I was looking for a house close to the universities. Multiple bedrooms, multiple bathrooms that I could rent out to students.
Okay.
And kind of cash flow that way. Cause you can definitely make more money doing
that. So you
that.
Weren't, you didn't, what you didn't do, what I noticed about this is you didn't go looking for a house to buy that filled your personal wants and needs.
No.
You did it based on what was going to be something that could cash flow once I can move out of this house based on the loan that I get.
Yeah.
So there's a difference too about how you're going about buying these single family homes, right?
Whereas where
you're fitting in the 0.01% versus I'm always talking about the 99.99%.
Right.
You're doing a house hacking. Yes. Yeah.
But it also needed to be feasible for the family that we had living in it at the time. But also I needed to be able to rent it out once we leave after that 12 months. And we ended up getting that place. We're still in that place. I think that place is going to stay ours now.
Yeah.
It's worked out as a great family home. Family's grown.
Yep.
Got all the space we need there. Every now and then I look at something like, oh, let's go do that.
You'll get there. I get told,
no, not that one. Just leave this house alone. So I think this one's going to be our house for the time being now. But that allowed me to obtain other properties because then I started dipping it. We got that property for a good price And then we were able to get a HELOC and then dip into that house's equity to make purchases on the commercial side.
The second
side.
House is
the And then that's where I kind of started doing my multiple families, the four units, the duplexes, and so on and so forth.
So so you buy this first single family home, you buy the second single family home. Right. You're now today up to 12 units that you own all by yourself. No investors. You're not even really looking for investors the way that I understand it, which is awesome. So you've worked your way up to 12 units. So so if I go along the path of how you've done this, it was a single family home, a second single family home. Then what came next? So duplex.
So then what came next was a four unit.
Okay, so single family home, four unit. Right. That takes us to six. What was it?
What did I do next? I did a duplex next.
Okay, that takes you to eight.
And then I did another four.
Another unit. Four unit, which takes you to 12. Mm. Okay, now you bought your first property in 2020.
September 2020.
September 2020. So right now is October 2024. So 4 years ago, right now you were at one property,
right?
One unit. Then you go to two. Then you went to, well, so basically if you work it backwards, right now you're at 12. So a year ago you're at six, three. I mean, you've essentially doubled unit count every year.
Yeah, because we got six on units. Average. We got six units this year. We did one in January, one in April.
And on average, you've doubled, you've doubled every year.
Yeah.
Right. And like we've kind of talking about, and we'll kind of hit, I know we skipped a lot right there because we're kind of working now to the back end of your story a little bit, and we'll kind of hit all the pieces we missed. But what we were talking about before and what we're going to kind of get into next is you're looking at refining some stuff right now and you're waiting to find kind of, rates are kind of in limbo here. They're about to start dropping. You're like, okay, well, if they drop a little bit more, this is how much cash out I can get. Plus this is what my payment will be. So you're kind of being patient with it, which is smart. But like what we've kind of already talked about and as you're going to be able to refi this stuff and potentially go out and be able to buy something like a, 8 to 20 unit.
Yeah.
Right. So like you're still going to be in a position to double potentially again, by the time we hit, another 12 months from now from where you're at, which is crazy to think about.
It's definitely the plan. Definitely looking and just trying to set myself up. I'm trying to make sure the properties that I've obtained are in good hands, get that all cleaned up. And then be able to utilize that equity.
Yeah. So what do you mean by good hands and all cleaned up?
I try to definitely, especially in Dubuque, where I'm at, you have a lot of older landlords who don't take a lot of deferred maintenance. So when I acquire these properties, a lot of times you do need some big things done to it, whether it's complete renovation overhauls or whether it's tuck pointing in the historical district or things like that. So I definitely try to put the money back into the properties right now. I don't take a penny out of it. I mean, the last 5 years, I just take the money. I just roll it in, roll it back into trying to acquire another property. I'm not paying myself, that's to each his own. But right now I'm just trying to grow that base of that pyramid. I'm trying to double back, put all my money back.
You've done a good job doing it so far, man.
Whether I'm acquiring properties or adding value, just putting all that money back into it.
All right. So you had the first two, then, you buy the next one, which is a duplex. How'd the duplex come about? How'd you find the duplex?
So the third one was a four unit. It started as me trying to buy the guy's duplex, but he was emotionally attached to it and invested to it. I spent a couple months trying to get that thing from him, and he just went. And then one day, I think it was like a week later, he's like, I got this other property you might like. So then we started looking at that. Then he showed me his other property. And I told him, all right, let's buy, I want to buy the two four units. I told him I wanted to buy both of them. And he's like, whoa, I was only looking to sell one. I was like, well, I'll take whatever you can get me. So then we just kind of started from that. I kind of built a relationship with him. But once again, he was emotionally attached to him. He didn't really want to sell. He had to sell, though. Interest rates were starting to rise. This is when interest rates started climbing. He had a bunch of term loans, and basically his philosophy was, I'm going to sell one, take that equity and pay off all the rest of it.
Right.
So I can just be free.
He had a bunch of term loans on his properties. Probably hadn't been putting, like you said, hadn't been putting money back into his properties.
And they all came due at once.
And the loans that he had on those properties all came due at the same time as rates were increasing.
Right.
And so therefore he could have had to maybe have to put money into the deal in order to get a loan, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that could be what he was facing. So in his mind, he's like, well, if I can sell these, I'm going to be in a much better situation because now I can just unlock that equity, walk away and go do something else, move away, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So one that I bought from him had, I think he pretty much had already paid off. So he basically took all of that equity and paid off the rest of his 10 properties and got out of all those. You know, basically his loans were going up. He was losing his cash flow.
So, and that's also why I always talk about it's always a great time to be in the market to buy, because had you not been looking at that point in time, and if you would have just been like so many other people where, interest rates are going up and now is not the time to buy.
Right.
Right. You would have missed out on that opportunity. But what people don't realize is like when rates go up, there's a lot of people that need to, there's people that always need to sell no matter what is going on. Right. If rates are low, then prices are going to be higher.
Right.
Right. Well, if rates are going up, it can be harder to make deals happen and people think you're on the sidelines. But sometimes that's when the best deals are found, because now if you can make a deal when rates are high, as you're starting to find out right now, when rates come back down, and if you're operating those deals correctly, you're going to be on the right side of it. And I truly believe, like, I don't know about you, Leonard, but I never try to perfectly time anything in the market.
No.
I just try to find good assets that cash flow, that I can add value to, that are going to be winners in the long term.
Yeah. And that's what you told me a year ago. I would purchase two properties with an 8% interest rate. I would have told you you're crazy.
Yeah.
But the numbers work. The numbers work.
Yep. So now, and those are the ones that you're looking at refinancing, right? Okay. So you buy the duplex. What was there any, you buy the 4-unit and that's like, you need a tuck pointing, you need to upgrade the common areas, or how'd you know what needed to be done with the property? How'd you find out?
So just watching YouTube videos of people, you know, of what to look for. And at this time I actually became kind of good friends with one of the inspectors in town. He did my first single family. He did my second single family. And I would always go to the inspections and I would ask questions. Hey, what are you looking at? What is this? Okay. So that way, when I go look at properties, I can already see this is a major issue.
You got an idea before you go under contract.
Right.
Right.
This is something I want to, you know, because I was all, you in the basement. I was like, what are you guys looking at? You know, what are you looking for? You're looking for water. I mean, I was green. I didn't know any of that stuff, you know? So that's what I started asking questions. So then when I go to these properties, I have a little bit more of a basis of what I'm looking for. And then when he would come and he'd do the inspection, he'd be like, no, this is solid here. He's like, you know, I would focus on this. I would focus on that. He was a guy in town who actually owns his own. He owns his own real estate too. Mm-hmm. So I think he also, you know, saw a little bit of himself in me. And was just lending a hand.
Yeah. That always helps, by the way, to have accountants or have, you know, an inspector or someone that also owns real estate. Mm-hmm. Because for example, I know a lot of inspectors that will just completely blow up deals, right? Because they're viewed as, okay, I'm doing work for my client. They're paying me to do an inspection. Mm-hmm. I got to show that this is worth it. And I got to go I mean, we bought a portfolio of 32 duplexes. We're selling those off one by one right now. And we're dealing with a different type of person buying the duplex than we are someone that buys an 80 unit apartment building. And it's like a lot of these people, it's the first property they buy. So they're getting this inspector to come through and it's like every single thing. Like there was this much rust on a piece of some piece of metal handrail. And like that was on there that they want. Like they want everything to be fixed. And really there's been inspectors that have blown up deals where I'm like, well, I'm not fixing it. Like the buyer can do that. It's a routine. It's a rare tear thing that, you know, you got to figure out. And you could have seen that during your, you know, walkthrough and whatnot. So, but the cool thing is like when you work with other people that are actually like real estate investors, like this inspector, he can also like probably give you advice or justify things.
Don't worry about it. He's like, I'm going to write this on the report because I have to. But I was like, you can do this yourself. Do this yourself.
That helps so much because if you're brand new, the inspector can scare the hell out of you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that happens all the time. So for you, that's actually a great, I'm glad that came up, because there's so many times where people will listen to somebody who's supposed to be the expert, but that quote unquote expert has never actually invested themselves at all. And they really don't understand the full picture of it. And when you do that, you're going to miss really good deals.
Right.
So you're able to obviously execute because of that relationship, which is awesome. So the inspector goes through, you do all that stuff. So the duplex, what all did you end up doing with the duplex? Was it that
one? So that one,
the 4-unit.
That one, we had upstairs units were already renovated. So I just renovated downstairs units.
When you say renovated, what do you mean by renovated?
These places were nasty. We did the inspection. They even had like a roach issue and all that. And
we've had a property with a roach issue. It sucks.
And the guy's like, I got a guy for you. My inspector, I got contacts for you. Yeah. So he just started opening the contact book for me. But we got all that cleaned up. We did cabinets, kitchens.
So ripped out the old stuff,
flooring all the way through. Put in new cabinets.
Yeah. Did you have to rip out any subflooring, or was the subflooring all right?
Subflooring was all right.
Rip out the carpet. Was carpet, LED, paint, linoleum, something.
What? All yeah. Okay. All that.
Rip it all out and
everything.
New appliances. New appliances. Light fixtures. New the common fixtures. Areas. Did you do anything these properties like in the common areas?
So the common areas, I have not yet. It's on my list to do.
What about? Do you have LED? Like in all of your common areas, do you have LED high efficient? Not. So like we do that like day one of like we're closing a 48 unit property here in about 3 weeks. On the day that we close that morning, we're getting new common area flooring, new common area paint. Mm. We're also getting all the common area, all the lights. So exterior and interior lights done on the first day.
Okay.
And so what we realize is that when we go through and get high efficiency LED light fixtures across the full property, our common area electric expense will go down somewhere between 10-25%. So you might want to look at doing that to your properties like right now, especially if you're 4, 5, 6 months away from refinancing. Because like every dollar, right? Every dollar that drops down, if I take one and if I divide that by a 6.5% cap rate, every dollar that drops to your NOI is $15 of value. And if you can get an 80% loan to value, that's another $8 to $10, right? That you're going to be able to get as loan proceeds to go invest again. So, and that's simple, right? Cause I mean, that's stuff. Something that I can even go through and, change out light fixtures. And like we get these like puck type fixtures. They look good. They look clean. They're pretty low profile. But I think we pay like maybe $12 or $15 per light fixture. They brighten up the space a lot.
Nice.
And then also, you get the benefit of, cause again, if they're not LED, if they're the older incandescent, they're
I definitely have the older ones.
So. Yeah. So that would be something that, cause then you can go back to the company or to the bank and say, look, even though you don't have a full year of, your income statement, you should be able to say, look, this is when we installed at all of my properties. This is when we installed the new LED lights, interior, exterior, right? Also the exterior, if you're there's some properties that the lights are on all day long.
Yeah.
Like make sure you have a photo eye, get a photo eye sensor set up, right? Because again, every dollar you can get to save on expenses, drop down to your NOI is going to be more refi proceeds than you can get to go buy the next deal.
We had that in one of our laundry rooms. It's just, they had a light bulb hanging on a wire.
Yep.
No light switch, it just runs.
Yep. Yeah. It's like laundry rooms. You could do a switch. You could do motion sensor in a laundry room. Some people go as far as do motion sensors through the common area hallways. We don't go that far. We want those on all the time. Yeah. But even if you don't have a full year of that, you can say, look, on October 1st, I went through and we did all of our common areas, exterior and interior. We did the light fixtures in the basements. And, you can see here's where our electric bill is this month now with those versus a year ago right now with the old ones, right? And then they can usually extrapolate that out to be, full year, Nice. So and they'll give you credit for those savings.
Good to know.
So that's something that I'd look into because that's something, again, easy. It might cost you, some time, obviously, and, And I mean, the duplexes, you probably don't really have much common space electric. But like the four units, I do. Yeah.
So we have... we have a couple common areas on there.
Yeah.
We have
if you have a basement.
We have the walk-in. So on both
hallways,
sides.
Hallways and stuff, right? Yep. So, I mean, it won't take you that long to do that. And, again, if you saved every dollar. But seeing like when I had the four unit, that's, because the first building I bought was a four unit. And it's really hard when you look at that. You're like, oh, well, it's only going to save me $30 a month or whatever, $10 a month, right?
Right.
You can never say only in front of money.
Right.
Because if you extrapolate that out to when you own 4,000 units,
it's a big deal.
It's a big difference, right? Or even 100 units or whatever it might be. You start adding zeros. So it's important to be able to get those habits down and view it as a percentage of how much you saved and then pretend that your numbers are bigger because your portfolio is bigger.
Right.
And be like, well, yeah, duh, at that point, it would have been no brainer. I'd make that decision to do that. So that's what I always would have as my mindset when I had a four unit and the 2-4 units, and I'd try to view it as a percentage. How efficient can I get these? Because as it grows,
that definitely makes sense,
right? Yeah. But that literally the day that we buy the 48 unit, an hour later we got 18 members going out. They're going to change all the common area, light bulb. And again, it's like those hallways right now are dark. They're dingy. Like we're going to save money, but we're going to brighten it up too.
Right,
so it's gonna feel better right away. So the tenants, the residents are seeing, day one they're fixing stuff up, but then also we're saving money.
Right.
Right. All right, so you buy the 4-unit, you fix it up. Mm-hmm. Are there all new tenants that are living in there at that point?
No, or did you, we only had two tenants turn over. One turned over right away, but that was by design. They had a lease that was ending, and I asked that, please don't renew it. Yep. And he was able to honor that. So,
and we were talking about this, too, before we started rolling. You manage these properties yourself.
Yeah.
Right? And I know I have some, you know, insights of what do you think has been the positive of you managing them yourself?
Well, you know exactly what's going on at your properties. I know who's in my properties, more mm-hmm. importantly. I have not had very much turnover at all. The ones that were there that stayed, they were long-term tenants, like 20 plus years, 15 plus years. And they were excited to have a new face that would come in and fix up everything and, you know, add value to their life. And then the ones that we have had turnover, I was able to handpick those. So I know exactly who's in my units. And I just, it's something that I need to work on, letting go and stepping back. But when you put in the work to acquire the property and you know what you went through to get it done, you know, a little reluctant to like,
no one takes care of the property like you're going to take care of the property, right?
Right.
Because no one has as much vested interest as you. Mm-hmm. But then also, like you said, you can control. You got things you can control. Mm-hmm. And that's also why, you know, the first, when we went and bought the first bigger property, it was 88 units. It was like a $6 million purchase. So it was like a $4.5 million loan. The bank was like, well, you have a couple storage units and you have 8 apartment units. You don't have the experience to manage this. You need to find a quote unquote professional management company. Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. We just kept the same company, which is the stupidest thing ever. We kept the same management company.
That was already there.
That had already been driving into the ground. That like, and I'm thinking these people are going to be on board with turning the property around. And it's just like, they drove it into the ground. And so I just fired them without asking the bank any permission. Yeah. Cause I'm like, I saw what was coming. I then turned it around a matter of like 3 months. And then I told the bank what happened. They're like, oh, you're doing a great job. Keep going. Right. So, but I was able to control, and that's been a key ingredient to our success here is as we've grown, is to be able to have control and a say of what's mm-hmm. going on. Now I'm not in it as much as I was back when we only had, you know, 100 units mm-hmm. as far as the day to day, cause I'm day to day, I'm zero. I'm out of it. We got a CEO, we got 50, 60 employees there, you know, whatever. But, I still, you know, we have quarterly board meetings. I still have a ton of control and influence there because I own the company still. Right. So it's still based on my vision and where I want to go. Now I've just got people executing for me, but that's been a big reason why we've been able to add value to these properties so fast. I was going through and doing the math, and if we had a third party property management company, there's no way we would have been able to do this. We bought 450 units in one town. Basically we own about 20 to 25% of the apartments in that town. That was in 2022, spring of 2022. The revenue each month when we bought those properties was $376,000. This month, it was $550,000, right? That does not happen if we have a third-party property management company doing the work, right? Because also in that time, we've done like $2 to $2.5 million of upgrades, new roofs, you know, some siding, landscaping, all the common areas like I talked about before, all new LED light fixtures. We've gone through and probably about 60% of the units, new flooring, paint, light fixtures in the units themselves. So we don't get that type of result. In my opinion, we don't get that type of result using third-party property management company.
No.
So I just think what you're doing there is fantastic. How many hours a week do you think you spend managing your 12 units?
That's a great question. Probably right now, probably a lot more. I would say maybe 10
hours a week
right now, because I'm going through and I'm making sure I've got all my T's crossed and, you know, my I's dotted, preparing to refinance. So
add that light fixture thing to your list.
So I'm always going through, what else can I do? What haven't I done?
Yep.
What do I have in the works? Working with the contractors on things that we're doing. How are we going to shuffle? Because when you have smaller units and you have people, because I'll renovate while you're in there. So we'll play musical chairs. And of course, I got to get the tenants to sign on it.
When you say you renovate, when they're in there, they're still living in the unit, and you'll do their cabinets, or are you just going to do like light fixtures?
So I've done that, But
done that, which one? Just the light fixtures?
Lights, fixtures, cabinets.
Cabinets kitchens. While they're still living in it.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
But then
we're looking at doing that too. That's
yeah,
awesome.
Oh yeah. Now I mean, but I've done it with long term tenants.
Yeah.
Who are like, I'm not moving. And I was like, that's fine. I was like, but how can we both win?
Yep.
You mean, I'm trying to improve your living space, your way of life, and they're all for it. It's like, yeah, you can tear out the kitchen.
Do you also increase the rent right away or just over time?
I do.
Later.
Right. So we have that conversation right yep. up front. I'd be completely transparent on what's going to transpire. And I've never had really any pushback ever because a lot of times tenants know, hey, I haven't had a rent increase in 8 years. But also my apartment looks the way it does because yep. I haven't had a rent increase
yeah, for sure. yeah.
in so long. But now I'm to the point where when I buy a 4-unit or something like that, I'll have one vacant unit. And then we'll do that vacant unit first, and then we'll bump,
you know, move somebody into that unit.
We'll take an existing tenant and move them over, gotcha. And then do theirs, and just kind of round cycle.
So with them being in the unit, how many times have you actually remodeled with someone being in a unit? Once, twice, three times. How long did it take you from like start to finish? How many days? Like, are we talking 2 days, 20 days?
I did one. The first one took probably the longest, and that was probably like 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
But we weren't in there every day, and I was doing okay. some of the work too.
Okay.
So it was just like a schedule thing, you know, I get off at
What's the shortest amount of time it took you to do one when someone was living in there?
Oh, probably did a couple days. Yeah, a couple days.
Now, when you did that, again, that was new flooring, paint, mm-hmm. light fixtures,
yeah.
cabinets.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Yeah. Toilet?
No, we didn't do the toilets on that one. That's next on our list. Is okay.
Let's just say the other thing, low flow toilets should be another thing that you hit because again, mm-hmm. you're gonna spend $75 to $125 per toilet, mm-hmm. And the shower heads. You can get low flow shower heads that actually feel like they have more water coming out of them than some of these apartments do. And so, because obviously, like you don't want to go so low flow or pick the wrong low flow shower head that now they have a bad shower experience because that would piss people off probably. I know it'd piss me off. So if you find some of the right stuff, I can probably actually connect you with our facilities guy. Maybe he can give you a list you can walk out of here mm-hmm. with, so you can see what we use. But yeah, I mean, you doing that too right now, especially if you're refinancing coming up 3, 4, 6 months to have a little bit of a track record mm-hmm. showing that your utilities are going down, that would go a long ways as well and be a good investment. I mean, especially if you're looking at, like, if you talk about per unit, again, you're talking
because most of
$150
ones...
to $200 per unit, maybe, you know, so it's $2,400. Now you get all new toilets, low flow water fixtures. Again, you can do the same thing for both the sinks
okay.
and have the low flow aerators or just get a new fixture that's low flow. Okay. But I'm telling you, the utility savings.
Yeah, because on the 4 units, we're paying the water on that. So
yep.
definitely.
Yep. The other thing that we'll do too sometimes is like attic insulation, whether we pay the utility or not as far as heat, because if we don't, well then, you know, it's just charging the tenant more. So when we go to raise rent, they're also considering,
if I can keep their finances, you know, low, I'm doing them a service.
Yeah. So you're doing them a service and you also got more room to raise your rent, you know, for that. So, you know, windows, we see a big saver on too. We'll save, that'll add another 10-20% savings on natural gas. Again, if it's something that we're paying heat for, but even places we don't pay heat, again, if you're helping your tenant out, you have more room to potentially raise rent and whatnot, or start charging back the utilities, right? So the utility conservation portion can be huge for the values and cash flow and whatnot.
Turn a good deal into a great deal.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. How did you then, you bought the single family home, the next single family home, how'd you position the 4-unit so that the bank was okay with the 4-unit that you bought?
So I went to a new bank.
Because you showed up.
Because
you showed up again. But this is a good lesson, though, because a lot of people rely. A lot of people will go the easy route, right, and rely on that same relationship over and over again. Which is good. But, like, I take my stuff to 5 to 7 different people each time because, like, you never know. Like, certain banks are more competitive at certain times depending on what their needs. So you should never rely on one. So that's great.
Yeah, I went to a new bank. This is my first relationship with a credit union. So before they were all with banks, credit union kind of – well, actually, I take that back. The second property was through a credit union as well.
Okay.
But a credit unit works very well with single families. They don't do any commercial
things. So then by the time you got to your third property, which is the 4-unit, that was a third lender as well.
So that was a third lender as well.
Okay, cool.
Now I went back to the first two, and just they couldn't help me. So I just went out and got a new relationship with a new bank, because that one I was doing an LLC.
Yep.
So it was a whole different world. I like to call it the Wild Wild West, because I went in there and he was like, I need this, this, this. And I was like, that's it. And he's like, yeah. It's like, okay.
versus the personal route.
Yeah. It's just like, all right, we'll rain. And you know, that one's still, because when you're doing the commercial for 2 to 4, I mean, you're still personally guaranteeing that.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's not on your credit report or anything like that. So people get freaked out about that, because the big thing nowadays is, oh, it's not personally guaranteed. It's not, yeah. I mean, I have every intent to pay it. Yep. So it's not a deal breaker for me, or we're going to pay the loan. But working with a new relationship, going in there, going through the whole LLC process, because that was all new to me. Did all that online, got my articles and all that jazz, everything that the bank needed. And then it was just as simple as filling out your, filling out basically all your financials.
Yep. Personal financial statement.
Yeah, your financial statement. Yep. And then going from there, it was just like, all right, do you got the money? It's like, well, this is what I got. It's like, all right, you can use this.
When you went there, do you still have that 60 grand of debt? Do you still have debt?
Oh, yeah.
How much? Like 50 of it?
Oh, yeah. It's getting bigger.
No. So hold on. Yeah. You're adding good debt to the pile.
No. I still have student loan debt. Yes.
Okay. Right.
And I'm currently back in school, so it's getting bigger.
Oh, okay. That's what I mean by that. Gotcha. So then they were just more of, on this deal, more of looking at the cash flow of the property and your personal financial state.
Yeah. This one was the first property I purchased that was off market. So I was working with an individual, so I was able to get a really good deal on it, so to speak, is what I'm trying to say. And then basically I just took all that. I did my pro forma, the one that I got from you, from the group and everything. I did all that, showed them what all I would make, and they made some minor tweaks to theirs, but that's pretty much the guy. Was like, that's pretty much what we use.
Yeah.
And there was enough cash flow there that it wasn't. There was no issues with it. The issue was how are you gonna get the down payment?
Yeah.
So
then the rest of the properties that you bought, was there any time in there like the lenders gave you crap, or was there any creative things that you had to do with like all the properties you have now? Like, are there any other creative things that you've had to do since, or is there any places that were a sticking point with getting more debt or having more debt?
Yeah, every single property was a roller coaster ride.
Well, especially right now. I mean, because we're rates, you were buying some of these deals with the hardest time to buy deals.
Yeah.
As rates were increasing.
That one, we ended up pulling equity out of the second property. We purchased the second property. We got a HELOC loan.
Okay.
So we already had that. I already had that in the back of my mind. It's like, okay, if I get this HELOC done while we're mortgaging the property, I won't have to go ask later on. So I already had that those funds waiting. On the commercial side, they just added that payment for the HELOC, you know, to the property in terms of qualifying for it. And the numbers worked out. So we just pulled that money from there to get that property. So we used equity from the single family home to purchase the multifamily. And that interest is a write-off as well.
Yeah.
which I learned.
For sure. I always want, people are, you know, always like, I don't know, Joel, you asked me, or someone, I know a lot of people ask, you ever plan on having zero debt on your property? I'm like, well, no, that's never the plan, because then I'm just going to have more in tax. I mean, I want to be able to leverage, right, to get a better return. But then also, like, there's tax benefits to having these loans as well, because again, the interest, the write-off that you get on the interest is.
Right. Just adds to the pile. Fourth property started as a, I was going to live in that one. So that was going to be another house hack. It was a duplex. And then things kind of fell through in terms of my debt to income ratio, because of the single families not being over a year.
Yep.
I started running to issues because I was buying too much too soon.
Yep.
It's a bad idea for the banks.
Yep.
So they basically were saying that they were counting my debt for this loan against me, but they didn't want to count the income because it wasn't over 12 months or it wasn't over on my last two tax returns. So although I'm making income off of them, they wouldn't count it. So basically I was taking on multiple mortgages.
So how'd you work through that?
I Put an LLC.
Put an LLC. So again, you went, okay. So you were initially,
then I pivoted.
You were initially looking at, again, right. just buying it as because a home. Because you were looking to live in it. Because right. you were only looking to put 3%, 5% down. I was only
looking to put 3 to 5% down and make it work.
So then you open up your LLC. They allow you to do that. But now you're having to put down 20, 25%.
Exactly. So now I got to come up with the money.
Where'd you come up with the money on this one?
Where did I come up with the money for this
one? Dip into the 401k again? No, was there some equity out there? Do you have some seller financing on this one?
This one was originally going to be a seller finance. Yeah. And I almost had the seller to do it. He actually kind of agreed to it. But he was 80 years old, and he's just like, man, he backed out before we got everything signed. We had everything drawn up, and he backed out on it. I was able to get him to bring the price down some because of it. But what I ended up doing for that property is I did have a little bit for 401k left on that one. But then that was a roller coaster. Stretching it thin. I'm trying to think of how to explain this one. So basically for this one, you need to come up with the 20% down. So I need 40 grand for this one. So I had most of it. And then I could pull some stuff from some other places.
Just from stacking cash.
Yeah, just from stacking. So, from stacking cash in my 401k.
So this is actually a good point to touch on. So as you were stacking cash, you still had debt. You could have paid down.
Oh, yeah, I didn't do that.
Right. But some people would be like, oh, instead of just stacking this cash, I'm going to use this cash to pay down my debts.
Right.
And you were like, well, no, I'll just pay the minimum on my debts, stay current with them.
Keep them current.
With the mindset, standing. Was your mindset of, because I need this, I might need this cash for another deal, or?
Well, I mean, although student loans suck, you know, 5%, 6% interest rate versus the returns I'm getting in real estate.
There you go.
I'd rather get the returns and just pay that forever.
Absolutely.
Until I die.
Absolutely.
I have no plans on paying more than what I have to for my student loans.
I just paid off the rest of my student loans.
Did you?
Yeah, it was like $3,800 that I had left because I'd just been paying the monthly the minimum like forever.
Yeah.
So I don't what I have five, 6 grand left maybe or something. I don't remember exactly what I had left. It got to a point where like with that one, I kind of got sick of just I don't know having to set the payments up and drawing out, and then we had to reconcile our bank account. I'm like, all right, let's just pay this one off.
Right.
But like it was the same thing for me. I mean, I always just had I just kept the personal debts that I did have and just monthly minimum. I got a boat at a 3% interest rate. People are like, why do you have a why? Like, I have like maybe $80,000 of debt that doesn't pay me. Well, actually, if you include the house, it's more than that. But for me, it's the same thing. I'm looking at exactly what you just said right there. Like the returns that I get investing and playing offense with my money.
Right.
Plus the opportunity cost. Like I can't ever make that up. Like at any point, I could pay off the debt. I could accelerate that. Decide to accelerate that. But if I do that now, like if you in that scenario, it would have blown up a really good deal.
Right.
Because if you would have paid down the debt, hey, great, I got no debt now, no student loans, but the opportunity cost was I wasn't going to be able to play offense with it. You wouldn't have been able to play offense with that money. You wouldn't be able to buy that deal.
Right.
Because you need to come up with the full 40.
Yeah. So, no, that's 100% right. And it was more than 40. So now I'm getting it all clear. I've been doing so much stuff, man. I can't keep it
all straight. No, I get it. I can't keep it all straight.
But, so this particular duplex I found, I was moving my mom out from Gurnee to Dubuque. So I was looking for a duplex, and I was going to house hack. I was going to live in one side for a year, put mom on the other side, just to get that property for her to move out here. It ended up not following through that way. I couldn't get it that way, so I switched it to the LLC. Problem was that the banker I was working with was only approved up to, I think, $250,000. Anything over that, he had to go to his bosses and get that approved by the committee and all that jazz. But at that time, I was running out of time with the seller because previously we had already had a loan approved through that new, I think it's 5% down for multifamily if you live in it, that new thing that they had that rolled out.
With Fannie?
Yeah, with Fannie.
Yeah.
But I didn't qualify for that because I had more than two properties.
Yeah.
But we didn't find that out. The bank
you
ate that one.
Stretched that game as far as it could.
Yeah, that, you know, but I didn't qualify for that one, so the bank had to eat all that stuff. But I want the property.
Yeah.
It's a good property. So I ended up going back to that banker, and he's like, well, I could do the deal, but I can only approve you up to, I think he only could approve me up to like $130,000.
Yep. So loan size.
Yeah, loan size.
Okay.
Was 130?
No, either way, he was short.
Yeah, he was short. So basically we came up with 90 grand to get that property. I put almost, I put about, 45% down to get that property.
What made you be able to, as you were stacking cash, was it me or was it someone else or what'd you read or how'd you decide to look at, well, this, the loans that I have, I'm only having to pay 5% interest. And I know that I'm making more money investing in real estate. Like, how'd you put those pieces together? Because that's something that so many people miss and don't ever think to look at, where I think I wake up a lot of people that I help with that, but also people just can sometimes figure it out themselves and realize, like, when they're paying attention to their own books, like, oh, wow, me playing offense makes so much more sense to do with my money.
I don't know. It's just something about giving that money away and not getting anything back.
I mean, it's crazy for me. So, like, you know, if you have a credit card or whatever, every now and then you get those offers from the credit card saying, hey, you can get, you know, up to $120,000. Mm-hmm. I take advantage of that.
Yeah.
I've done that like 5 or 6 times where I will pull on that and I'll just put the full thing. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know how, like, I'm probably stretching what I'm supposed to do, but I just say I don't lie on the application. I say it's for other or whatever. And then they approve me for an amount.
Yeah.
I take it, I invest it. And again, I'm writing off that interest. Right. But I look at, okay, even there's a couple of those that I did that I was 11% interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm about to actually pay, I think, one of those off here in January. So in a couple months left on it. But me taking that, I think that one was like a $50,000 loan. That $50,000 has turned into $125,000 now. Plus, it's paid me every single month.
Right.
So me not taking advantage of that would have been a huge opportunity cost, right? And so it's the same thing if you're able to stack money and then know how to learn the game to go play offense with it to get that money multiplying. Mm-hmm. You now got, I mean, compound interest working for you is.
Yeah,
an unbelievable.
It was better than the 401k, which is why I had no problem giving it up.
No doubt. Like, yeah. And this is the thing too, is like with the 401k, it's so hard to get people to realize how crappy of a deal a 401k is until you're truly enlightened and you come to an actual real asset and you get cash flow and you get the tax benefits and you see. I mean, with the 401k too, you have to wait so long before you can touch that and tap into it.
Right.
And then once you can do that, you've only got such a period to be able to do that before it's now taxed again. It's like, I don't know. To me, it's just like there's too many. I don't want to give up control of my assets. I want to be able to get assets that I can take the money and do with whatever I want with, and I got control over, and I don't want it tied up somewhere else where there's all these rules, right?
Right.
So no, I think that's really cool that you. So do you think you just were doing the math? You're realizing, oh,
so yeah, okay. I was just running the deals, looking at it, and I'm just like,
man, this cash on cash return.
I mean, at that point, I was checking, I was checking my credit score every day, hoping it would change. I was checking my bank accounts, checking this, checking that every day. Just like, how much did we go up today? How much did we go up today?
Yep.
So yeah, it just kind of dawned on me. And I just put 2 and 2 together and I was like, well, why am I going to pay that off?
Right. Because you start realizing and doing, you start underwriting the deals that you're putting offers in. You're like, okay, this is paying me 10% cash on cash.
Right.
My loan over here is only 5 or 6%.
Right.
It's a no brainer.
Right. It was pretty easy. Yep. So
what I hate when you see about like loans is there's some people out there that promote, like they'll say, oh, okay, well, yeah, you're going to go borrow $30,000, but then you take the interest and that $30,000 thing that you got a loan for is actually like my boat. It's actually going to cost you $65,000 over the 15 years that you're amortizing the boat. And I'm like, yeah, but you're missing out on the opportunity cost of playing offense.
Yeah.
Because simultaneously, if I can save that money and invested in something that then covers that payment, now my money's growing for me while getting paid to then cover that liability that I've got. So I don't know. It's just, I think that's awesome that that's how you looked at it so early on. And, you know, because a lot of people miss that.
We looked at that so much that for that property, like I said, we put like 45% down. Everything I had in my 401k, everything I had in my Roth, and then I went out and I got a hard money loan to come up with the other 45. So as I start stacking all this together, even all the interest that I'm paying out, it still doesn't add up to the rewards that I'm getting.
Is this one of the deals you're also looking at refinancing with this?
Package? This particular one, yes.
Okay.
Because this one now is on So this one is. So that that property, that fourth property has already been refinanced 6 months after I bought it, and I'll be refinancing it again.
Okay.
And
that's the thing too, is like some people might be listening like, oh wow, you put 45% down on a property. I'm like, well, right. You also got a hard money loan, but still, like, we'll buy deals. We'll be down. We bought a deal, 246 unit deal about a year and 3 months ago. And we're like, we had to put 40% down. Plus, like, we're coming up with we came up with all the cash, the $5 million of cash to put into the deal for upgrades.
Right.
Some people are like, why are you doing that? I'm like, cause you can't just look at one metric. Right. You can't just look at how much money you need to put down. Right. You can't just look at what the cap rate is. You can't just look at what the day one cash flow is. You need to be able to look at a deal, and if it's in an area that you like, and if there's upside to that deal, you need to be able to look at a deal from, you know, you need to be able to look at 5, 6, 7 different things, and you need to be able to look at a deal from multiple angles to see if it's a true investment or not. And if you don't do that, you're going to miss out on some of the best deals. So some of the best deals that we've picked up have actually came to me from other real estate investors who buy real estate. But I only buy it if it's a 10x gross rent multiplier.
Yeah.
Which means, what does that mean? Because I don't even know. I think they look at 1 month or a year's worth of revenue. It'd be a year's worth of revenue, I think. And they multiply that revenue by 10. Mm. But the problem is if you do that and you don't look at who is responsible for the utilities, you got a problem. Because really, I might be willing to pay more for that property. I might be willing to pay a 13 times gross rent multiplier if the tenants are paying all of the utilities.
Right.
Or could be paying all the utilities. Right? Because now, again, that's less money out of my pocket. Therefore, my NOI is higher. There's a higher value to that property. So if you just blanket cover and you just say, well, I'm only looking for deals that are a 7% cap rate. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm only looking for deals that are 10 rent gross multiplier.
If you're getting started and you're looking at, you're never going to find a deal.
You're never going to start. That's the problem. And you're going to miss out. You're never going to start. But also, if you do get started, you might get lucky and get started, but then you will at some point miss a really, really good deal. Right. And we've been able to get deals because we don't look at it that way. Like, we look at it, again, we're looking at the cash on cash return day one. We're looking at what the cash on cash return could be year three if we do our CapEx. We're looking at what the cap rate is now versus a look back cap rate. We're looking at so many different things. We're looking at how much equity we can build in the deal to then refinance out all of our stuff if a deal won't cash flow as much as we want it to for years 1 through 3, right? Because if I can make it up on a refi later and it's a great location, I want to do the deal. So you got to be able to, and I just from like your story and you sharing like the details of the deals that you've done, and you've kind of done, you've done deals in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, a lot of different ways. Like I said, money.
Which means you're also looking at deals from different perspectives. Whether you realize it or not, you're looking at deals from different perspectives, not necessarily just one perspective.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Because if you use, you know, all the known metrics, especially when you're doing it yourself, you're never going to cash flow in your eyes.
If it's just one.
When you're doing 2 units to 4 units and you're trying to get all of those metrics to hit, I mean, you find that deal, let me know.
Absolutely. And not to say that it doesn't happen, right? Because there are deals for sure that it does, but they're far and few in between, and you will for sure miss diamond in the rough deals that are just absolute no-brainer. I mean, this $33 million portfolio that we bought in 2021, everyone and their mom passed on it because of they just were looking at the wrong thing. Yeah. I was able to break down the deal, and like once I finally did all my homework on this deal, which I did too initially, I overlooked it. I saw it listed at $33 million, and for what it was a 78-unit townhome, a 76-unit townhome, and 32 duplexes. And when I just kind of did my quick math, I'm like, oh, it doesn't work. One day I got bored. I'm like, let me break this deal down. Right. Let me break it down all the way. And what I found is if I could buy the whole thing, and then if I broke it apart, because the seller who was selling it wanted one transaction. He was older. He wanted to sell it all as one big group, the 32 duplexes and the 76 unit and 78 unit. I started looking at it like, okay, if I operate these things how we would operate them, and now if I'm willing to sell things individually, including all the duplexes, what's it actually worth? And I'm like, well, I could buy this for $33 million today.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, if I broke it all apart tomorrow without even doing anything, I could list it all for $39 million and probably go for about $39 million. Now, it'd take a while to sell those duplexes.
Right.
But I'm like, man, the arbitrage in breaking it apart was huge. And other people didn't look at it that way.
Right.
Right. But then I was like, well, if we actually do our whole thing here and do our CapEx, I mean, we can probably sell this thing for 48 to $52 million 10 years from now, which was 2031 because we bought it in 2021. Right. Well, we're selling the whole thing up. We already sold the 78-unit townhome, the 76-unit townhome. Now we've already sold like 10 duplexes. And we're right now on pace to basically sell all that for right around $51 million. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's like been a home run. And this is something that was listed on the market, on the MLS. Like everybody was out there to see it. It sat forever. But everyone kind of, even myself initially, overlooked it. I didn't take my time because, again, just high level, it didn't look like a deal. Mm-hmm. But once you dove into the details and you were able to look at things from multiple different angles, I'm like, this is a diamond in the rough. This is a no-brainer. I think it was actually listed like 35 million. We got them down to 33 million. But I either way, I was like, the next day, if we broke it all apart as is, it's 39 million all day.
Yeah.
So I think, it's a great learning lesson, the way that you've gone about, you know, building your portfolio from, you know, 0 units in 2019 to being at 12 units today, where you've doubled your portfolio every single year. You can continue. You should really start to focus on some of these utility cost savings things to try to take advantage of every dollar you can get to the net operating income line as possible. Because when it comes time to refinance, it's going to give you more dollars. Mm-hmm. And when you get more dollars, you're able to go out and buy, like, your next deal, you might be able to buy a portfolio of 3-4 units and buy 12. And now you just doubled again. And that might be 5 months from now, 6 months from now, or a year from now, or whatever. But you just doubled. Now you're at, instead of being at 12, you're now at 24. Right now you go and do that again with those 12 units, and as fast as you can, turn them around like you have been.
Yeah.
Right. And going through and update the common areas and get high efficiency, you know, utilities through there, get the rents to where they should be. Like, you're going to be in a position again, potentially, to do the same thing the following year. Yeah. And the coolest thing about it with what you're doing is you're not making excuses. Like, I don't have any equity, or I don't have the partners, or I don't know who would invest. Cause that's something that I come across all the time. People I'm trying to help. Well, I don't know people have money. Well, dude, you could go buy a duplex.
What are you willing to give up to get it? I mean, it's kind of how I look at it. Like I said, when I was looking for that, to get the funds to you know, to buy a property, it's like, okay, I got my 401k. Hey, I got my Roth. People aren't willing,
for sure,
to put that on. They're not willing to empty their savings to go get. I mean, I've emptied my savings. I've emptied my 401k. I've emptied my Roth 2-3 times over in the last year, but it's all for a purpose. So, I mean, there's ways to do it. It's just, what are you willing to do to get it done?
I've got, like, personally, I've had 7 figures in my bank account. The next day, it's zero because I'm all in. Yeah. Like, the personal bank account, I'm all in on what I'm doing.
Yeah, but I went to zero.
So the next day, I'm at zero. And it's still, and like, but again, I every single year, like right about now, so being fourth quarter of 2024 right now, is about the time that I start building out my, you know, kind of like more detailed personal budget for me, my wife, our family, whatever, for 2025. So I'm willing to go to zero right now to buy these new deals, because I know what's coming from my current holdings, but also what's coming from the new deals that we're buying and my overall personal global financial, like, statement, an income statement. I know where I'm going to be at, and I know how long it's going to take me to stack that money back up again.
Right.
Right. So yeah, that might not ever go away if you continue to try to scale and grow.
I almost go to zero every time. Because it, just because of how fast I'm buying them, it's like, okay, we're spending X amount on renovations, X amount, and then the deal falls in your lap, and you're like, all right,
what's the most challenging thing that with your real estate portfolio, with your investing journey, like, what's the most challenging thing maybe you're facing right now today?
The biggest thing is the time that I'm starting to run into not having enough hours in the day, in terms of family, real estate, work, school, that whole shebang. I mean, you know, that's the biggest thing, and making sure that I'm leaving the properties in good hands. So instead of me doing the work, I've been getting, you know, contractors to do the stuff instead of me and the buddies doing it.
Well, that's like what we were talking about before the show, is your next big hurdle is, like, you're able to find deals. You're able to figure out how to find the money for the deals, right? And as you get more and more assets, that becomes easier and easier.
It's
not necessarily where your next bottleneck isn't necessarily going to be finding the deals or the money. It's going to be the actual operation of it.
Right.
That's going to be the next bottleneck. Yeah. And, you know, as we were talking before we started the show, to me, the biggest thing that you should start working on now proactively is getting all your systems processes written down, so that you don't have to go out. Like, if I were you, especially where you're at right now, I'm not going to try to find a third party property management company.
No,
I'm trying to set up the infrastructure and the processes, procedures to be able to make my first hire right now. Obviously, you're already kind of starting to do that because you're getting contractors that are starting to work for you. And maybe you go the contractor route with some of this stuff for a little while, right? I don't know. But that's how you need to be able to start getting your time back and get some of the tasks off. Yeah. And that's where, again, you creating your processes, procedures, almost having the Leonard Brady way, you know, operating manual of your real estate, so that then you can plug and play someone else. And hey, here's exactly what you do, when you do it, how you do it.
Right.
How often you do it, when it needs to be done. This is how this is how we're moving people out. This is how we're moving people in. This is how we're marketing. This is how we're collecting rent. This is what happens if they don't pay rent. This is how we screen people. This is right. And like, so like all this stuff, that you, again, either don't want to do or aren't as good at, that's the stuff that you should try to farm out and have, again, a contractor. Maybe you start with a contractor or a part-time employee or whatever it might be.
Right.
Right. Now, what starts to happen then is like when I got to like 12, 15, 20 employees, now that was another time suck, right? So that's why I hired a chief operating officer, right? So it's going to also be important too that when you start underwriting these deals that you're able to set aside appropriate management fees and whatnot out of the deals. I don't know how you've underwritten them currently because obviously sometimes to get started you don't have.
Yeah, I think the first ones I didn't. Now I do. Yep.
So that'll give you resources because you've already set that bucket up. Right. So that's going to give you a resource and I'd keep setting that bucket up and I'd even have some type, a little bit of a payroll coming out of there or something. Right. Cause you're going to need resources, AKA money to be able to, you know, figure out the next hire.
Right.
Right. To be able to grow this thing. And that's always the challenge. And like, for me, I didn't do a good enough job at that early on either. And like, we were still paying for that. I mean, shit, we're probably still paying for that now. Right. And that's always a thing that you got to tune and correct and whatever. But, I think that's what's coming around the corner for you, but I'm just super excited for you because of what you've done. Like, and you own 100% of it, which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm looking for properties where I can definitely add value. I'm looking for certain areas. Like I said, most of the properties that I get, I look on Facebook Marketplace. So I'm looking at it as it's being advertised as for rent. So I'm able to, I mean, I've even went to the property as a potential tenant and said, hey, can I buy this thing?
Which is awesome.
You know, but I'm just making sure that it's got good bones, but it needs some TLC. I'm also looking for what type of tenants are there, you know, and I'm a guy that doesn't qualify for housing. I'm also looking for that because I'm a guy that I'll utilize housing as well. Not all my properties are. Not all Section my tenants 8. Are. Yeah. But some are. And some of those are my best tenants.
Yeah. We allow Section 8. They still have to go through our regular approval process, application, background check, and whatnot. And they have to show they can pay their portion of rent. But the same thing with us. Like, we've got, you know, as long as we still screen and do the things that we need to do. I mean, I'd say, you know, we probably have, I don't know, maybe out of, you know, about 2,000 units, we've got maybe, I don't know, 40 total units, 20 to 40 units that are like Section 8. So it's the same thing for us at certain properties that there's a need for it. And, you know, again, we just screen people just like any other tenant. Mm-hmm. Hey, if you qualify, you qualify. Let's roll. When you say value add, what specifically, again, are you kind of looking at? Like, what are you... Because there's a lot of different value add.
Yeah.
What do you primarily look at?
Ideally, I'm looking for the quick, easy stuff, you know, whether it's, and when I say quick and easy, I mean like kitchen, the cosmetic stuff, kitchen cabinets. Carpets, cabinets, bathrooms. I'm not looking to tear out walls and, you know, things like that. I'm not looking to add roofs, but if I have to, I do. But I mean, those aren't the ones I'm looking for. I'm looking for where I can come in and it's strictly cosmetic. It's got a great layout, great flow to it, and something that I can turn really quickly.
Makes sense. Have you bought a property yet where you haven't really had to remodel to just push rents, or you've had to remodel stuff?
I'm not paying it.
They
want a pretty penny.
Yeah, for sure.
A pretty penny, which is fine, but once you start running the numbers, it's not cash flowing.
But sometimes, I guess what I'm trying, sometimes you come across the assets that are just a little bit nicer where you don't necessarily have to do as much, but they're undervalued by the person that owns it. They don't necessarily realize what they have or whatever. And they're like, oh, you want that? Okay, yeah, this number works. So I didn't know if you came across that.
No, not really, but I'll say this last one I got, I've kind of came across it because what I paid for and what it's worth, I mean, it appraised for $25,000 more than what I bought it for. Before I even bought it.
And the purchase price was how much?
The purchase price for that one was it $175,000?
So $25,000 over appraised. So like you're talking like almost 20%, 18%. It appraised for 18% more than what you actually.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you just got a guy that wants to be done.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
And
which happens
from a cash flow standpoint, what are you doing? You said you right now you're not taking anything cash flow personally, you're reinvesting it. Well, I mean, you're not buying a property every month. So where are you putting that money? Are you storing it on a monthly?
It's just a build up in accounts. You know, I have my maintenance account. I have my add value account. I have my operating account.
So you have multiple bank accounts set up.
Yeah.
So renters pay into one bank account.
Yep.
You got like an operating account.
Mm-hmm.
Then like at the end of the month or quarterly,
okay, manual or have automatic transfer for this account.
So you'll do like a CapEx account. You'll do like a maintenance account. So you kind of have set asides for future things that are coming. Or if nothing comes, then okay, now I guess got more money to put in my next property. Basically.
And I just keep my accounting really, really good, because if not, your property comes, I'll drain it all and go get it.
Absolutely.
You know, and figure it out later.
Do your banks and lenders make you escrow taxes, or do you escrow taxes, so, real estate taxes?
Yeah. No, the commercial side, no. Which was new for me because I was like, all right, so you got to pay that on your own. I was like, oh, okay.
So the cool thing, is like, you know, we've obviously started to go where we self, you know, direct to those funds as well. Mm-hmm. But the interest we can earn on those are substantial. So like as that grows over time, it's a big asset to be able to have on your books versus, you know, again, usually if you give that to the banks, they're able to loan that stuff out, but they're usually not paying you interest on it. So it could be another thing that you can play offense with to rack up more funds. So where are you trying to get to? Like, what is your goal with the real estate investing game?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't, because I go back and forth, and, you know, I'm perfectly fine with working my 9-to-5 and having real estate cover all my financial endeavors, you know, all my bills, and then just enjoying life with my W-2 money. If that's the way it goes down the line, I'm completely fine with that. Or I'm completely fine with just eventually quitting my day job and only doing real estate.
So you like the thought, it sounds like to me, you like the thought of having options.
Yeah. I'm setting it up for either or, you know, I'm not putting a limitation on myself, but I'm also not putting an expectation on myself, because I'm going at it 100% no matter what, and whatever happens. I'm okay with either way. But I'm not, like I said, I'm not banking on this money to come in to pay my bills either. You know, I'm just looking to grow. And eventually I'll get to a point, you know, maybe as more of my time and I have to start delegating, you know, maybe I'll have a clearer picture of which avenue I want to go. You know, if I build the right team where I'm okay with being hands off, then maybe I continue to grow. You know, if I feel like, oh man, I can't find the right team or something, you know, maybe I do stay hands on, then that's what I do full time. So, not really sure, but like at the end of the day, if I have a W-2 job with good benefits, lots of vacation, and I'm making a good wage, but on the back end, I have all my real estate, which allows me and my family to travel and go out the country and do all the things that we want to do, I'm perfectly fine.
There's people in this world that they'll grow to 50, 80, 200, 400 units, and they still have a regular, you know, their regular 9-to-5 job. But again, to them, kind of like what you said, and to me, it sounds like, maybe I'm not hitting it right, to me, it sounds like, you know, just to have that option, have the options in life, right? It's not like you hate your 9-to-5 so much, like, I got to be done. It's not like, you're active, you want to be doing stuff, probably you don't want to just, so you like the optionality of it. And probably, do you think of it in a way that maybe makes it easier for you to work longer too at your regular 9-to-5? If you know you could walk away at any time,
someday, well, yeah, I mean,
that probably makes it easier to be, you know, like, well, I don't have to be doing this.
What do they call it? The FU money,
right?
So, where it's just like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah,
you know, but you know, I think I'm in a good spot right now with the company that I'm at, where you know, work is not a hassle.
Yep.
You know, you come there, it's fun, good environment. So I've been fortunate with that, where I can do both. Yep. You know, I can take time off when I want. I can still do things with my family and then also receive a paycheck. Yep. But then I still have the real estate on this side. So, and that could change one day.
Yeah, for sure.
But for now, I'm in a good space where I don't mind doing both.
Yep. See, what the crazy thing is like, and I don't know if you're willing to share. I know you shared the numbers with me as far as how much you're looking out to be able to refinance out.
Yeah.
How much are you willing to share that here?
Yeah. No, that's
fine. So with the properties right now that you're looking to refinance out, you're thinking you're going to get how much out of that refinance?
What were we talking about? So the one property, I know we have at least 80. I mean, realistically, I could probably pull out 200.
200,000.
If I wanted to pull out the full 200.
In a matter of 5 years, you go from being $60,000 in debt to now still having that debt and maybe a little bit more debt because you're going back to school, you said. But you also got the ability now to pull on $200,000 of equity. So if you come across a deal that you're like, oh, damn, this is a deal, and it's a $750,000 deal, you're going to be able to go do that deal.
Right.
In the next 6 to 12 months.
Right.
Like, how sweet is – how much of a different position is that from where you were at 5 years – 5 and 7 years ago?
Yeah, it's a big difference. I mean, and that's – like I said, that's just the refi. That's not selling and getting, you know.
So you still own the properties. You're still going to be paying down debt. Yep. You're still going to have tax benefits. You're still going to have – you know, cash flow from those properties because all the cash flow is not going to go away. The cash flow will go down a little bit from those properties. Well, no, actually, because you're going to be in a lower interest rate on some of
those. It's going to be about the same.
Cash flow will be about the same as what it is right now because you're going to get better because as interest rates come down, right? Yeah. And if interest rates keep going down and this happens not for another 3 or 4 months, you might actually be able to get 230 out and have the same monthly pay, the same cash flow from those properties. Now you go put that 230 to work and again, potentially $750,000 to $1 million deal that you're buying by yourself. And then if you reposition that thing, right? Now that thing a year and a half from now is worth, you know, a year and a half after you buy it is worth, instead of $1 million, it's worth 1.2, 1.4. Like you can start to see how the zeros add up and how you're in a completely
snowball effect for sure.
Like you're like to the point where you're getting close to the point where like the snowball is about to take off.
Yeah.
And that's why I really think the next thing for you is to figure out that operational part because that'll be what slows you down a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, man, those are all good problems. So this is awesome, man. I appreciate you driving over here. I don't know if you have, you know, Joel, do you have anything else that you want to ask Leonard? Leonard, if you had to share one thing, one piece of advice with anybody, you know, what that might be listening that is where you were at 5, 7 years ago in debt, you know, living paycheck to paycheck with most of that paycheck going to debt. They might have judgments. They might have liens. They might have whatever. What's the piece of advice that you'd give that person?
The biggest thing that kind of helped me start was how quickly can you double what you have, no matter what you have? How quickly can you turn that $5 into $10? And what's your best method of doing so? And then start with that.
Because it wouldn't even have to be real estate at that point.
No, yeah, it doesn't have to be real estate. I mean, if you cut hair, you know, work it backwards. You know, how many heads do I have to cut to make X amount?
Yep. So if I got a little barbershop right now that I've got, right? And if I'm working 4.5 days a week, because I like to take a half week off, or what can I do differently to instead of 40 heads, you know, up that to 50 heads, right? So that you're saying that? Okay.
It's just the numbers itself. And, you know, I mean, I've worked 3 jobs. You know, 2 full-time, a part-time in order to get myself in the position to get out of, you know, the silly debt and little things like, I mean, you got to put the time in, you know, sacrifices have to be made. It's not always pretty. I guess the biggest thing is if you have a family, get everybody on board on how you're going to do this. Because, you know, I've spent plenty of long hours working, missing things. My kids are little. So it's more important that I miss them now than later, in my opinion.
I
want to be able to go to soccer games and football games and stuff like that. You know, we're at home watching cartoons. We can do that anytime. You know, we have our weekends still. But putting the work in, treating your personal finances like business finances, knowing what you're spending, cutting back on things. I mean, there's just sacrifices that you have to make if you really want it. If you want it. And then you'll see that snowball effect when you're saving money. I think that was the biggest thing for me is you put $50 aside a week or this, and then you look back 2 months later and it's like, oh, you have this X amount. And then 100%. You start, can I do any more? And at first it's kind of like a diet, you know, you don't see the results right away, but then when you start see it, it gets easier and easier and easier to stay disciplined and do those things.
And I mean, it is hard though to get the discipline to start to see the snowball effect sometimes because people are like, oh, is my effort really paying off? Or like, and they're not staying consistent. They're not like, if you can get, you got to be obsessed with being consistent. And if you can get that obsession of being consistent, it takes care of a lot of things and it can happen sooner than what people think too.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if it took you, you know, if it took you, again, 5 years to do what Leonard's accomplished to like set you, like you're setting yourself up for life. And not only are you setting yourself up for life, like your future family, like you're like the, you called it the pyramid or the foundation of the pyramid or whatever you called it before that foundation, like you're really starting to solidify something like super, super, super special. And again, it's been 5 years,
right?
It's been 5 years.
You start getting that iceberg effect, you know, where you don't see all the work that goes into it, you know? But I mean, other people don't see it, but it's there. It's there. You got to do work.
Well, and that's what the point is too, is like, you don't have to be like, who cares? It doesn't matter your age. You could be 40, you could be 49. Well, by the time you're 54, like, and you need to, you could be 49, have nothing for retirement if you want to retire. Mm-hmm. And you could be retired by 54 if you wanted to be.
Right.
But like Leonard said, are you going to be able to be consistent enough to be able to do that? Are you going to be able to make the short-term sacrifice to get to where you want to be long-term?
Some people don't.
That's the question.
And that's okay.
Right.
But you got to live with, you got to live with that.
You
got to
live with it. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You got to live with it. So
that's great, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming in, dude. It's awesome seeing you succeed. And I mean, I'm sure this won't be the only time you're going to be on here, because I want to, as you keep having success, like, your story not taking on other investors is awesome. You know, we've got a portion of our portfolio now that we're just starting to buy with no investors and whatnot. And so I think like what you're doing is awesome, man. It's unique because there's not a lot of people doing what you're trying to do.
Right.
And so it's cool that you're building it that way. And I mean, keep on that path. And I'm excited to see. I mean, I think Leonard could have a jet one day if he wants that. He might not want that, but
we'll see, man. That'd be pretty cool.
It's a sweet foundation he's got. So Leonard, thank you for joining us. We'll share Leonard's contact, like his Instagram handle and whatnot. Sure. And if you got any other questions for Leonard, you know, you can reach out. And we'll thank you guys for joining. I appreciate it. Thanks, Leonard.
Yeah, awesome.